Good evening, and I forgot a very important thing I was going to tell, but the last evening I completely forgot. So today I would like to but before I mention about what I forgot, very important question I was given today. Very important question. So I would like to try to give answer for this question. Okay. My understanding of what you said in relation to the question of what is genuine or not is that what is genuine or not is not established in advance. Rather, it depends on the action or doing. No. You clear? Okay. You once told me about the quality of the seed. Isn't the quality of the seed established in advance, in a real sense? Yes? Okay, you understand? The seed is already established quality in advance, no? But I say no, I reply for this. No. No. Depending on the shooting way of the sprout, the quality of the seed is not always established. Depending on the shooting way of the sprout, the quality of the seed is not always established in advance. Okay. For example, we don't know whether it is seed or not, you know, in advance. When it is sprouting, it is seed. It is seed. Or we don't know. For example, maybe if I'm shooting sprout from this, we recognize, this is a seed. But before that, this is not seed. This is some seed or no? This is no. This is actually not seed, this one. But when it's shooting sprout, this is seed. Agree. So it is not established in advance, even still. Therefore, because of the function, something is recognized. Something is can be defined as something because of its function. Yeah? Before it comes function, it, before the manifestation of the function, it is not anything in advance. No. So when a seed is shooting the sprout, it is a seed. Shooting sprout, that is a seed. Until that, the seed is mere potentiality. Depending on all the surroundings of whatever, even a seed cannot sprout. That's, after all, not a seed. Does it make sense? Okay. Zen Master Dogen described. Now, you say, everybody knows now. Do you know now? Now. N-O-W. I'm teaching you English. N-O-W. Everybody knows. But Zen Master Dogen himself. Now doesn't exist. Now doesn't exist in advance. Now awareness is now awareness arises, that is now. The awareness of now arises, that is now. And before that, there isn't any now. So therefore function manifests. Whatever. So this is my reply for this question. Maybe you may have a second question about this. If so, please ask. Not clear? Is it clear or not clear? Okay. You describe the alternate diagram of the Dharma life trinity, which is not dualistic. That is, light, shadow are integrated. Light and shadow are integrated. Therefore, this better reflects where there is light, there is shadow. However, in the point experience, not side, but point, apex experience, in the point experiences, I didn't sense any shadow, rather only light. You understand this question, no? Okay, my does this mean my sensitivity is lacking? Okay. Hmm. Okay, I reply for this, okay? For example, have you ever seen lightning in the night? Lightning. Morning to Peninsula we have session in the darkness. Oh, seriously. In the midst of lightning, of course no shadow. But soon after, what it comes? What is coming? Darkness. Whatever we experience, that is very fresh. Oh, very wonderful, very fresh experience. But soon after, it doesn't stay. Whatever experience, so fresh and vivid, soon it is getting into habit. The quality is not stay in the same quality. Everything is ever changing, even this. So therefore we need a new experience. Seriously. We need a seamless new breath. You got once real breath. That's enough to live. You need a seamless new breath and a new experience. Yeah. Like this. Lightning also. Lightning is no shadow. But soon after, darkness. That's it. Okay. In the past, you have written about clearly distinguishing this and this, this and not this. My feeling is that this is an actualization of the Dharma Light Trinity, and not this is an actualization of the shadow. And I have today in this segment. I explained this, no? Okay. In some experiences, it seems like one or the other, and yet even in intense ego state, there can be some awareness, like there. Okay, I'll reply this one. This. I said this is it. This is it. This is it. Very positive, no? But this is like lightning. This is lightning. But soon after this lightning, we get into habitual. Even this is it. Soon getting habitual, really. So what we need is denial. Denial is the right word, I don't know. Denial. This is not. This is our state, self-denial, which is seriously we need. This is it. Also we need, this is not. Self-denial. Very important denial, don't you think so? This is not negative. This is not the actualization of shadow trinity. No. Both. We need both. Always both. This is it and this is not. Both we need. Always. You understand or not? We need both. Inevitably, seriously, we are dying. We are dying. We are magnifying, being magnified. Seriously. So we need always. This is not such a state. Such a no. This is not more genuine experience. New experience. Seriously, we need new lightning, new experience, new awareness. Even same breath, but shouldn't be repetition. Shouldn't be repetition. Even this breath. Real mindful breath. This is it. Okay, this is it. But soon it become repetition. Habitual. So we need this is not. This is what I meant. Okay. Sorry?
Discrimination.
Not a denial. Discrimination. 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 The difficult, very discrimination. Oh, I need a dictionary. It's too late to. But you know. In Japanese, stay
means denial.
Therefore, comparison, no? There is comparison, no? Discrimination implies compare something to two things to distinguish. But in this case, self denial. Zikoshite in Japanese. Self denial. I think self denial is the best. We need always. Whatever we experience, soon after, we should forget. We shouldn't keep it. Whatever precept, we shouldn't keep. We shouldn't grasp. Therefore, this is not. At the same time. Also, in relation to this question, you said something. Something like the stronger the light, the stronger the shadow. Yes, I said. Does this work the other way around? The stronger the shadow, the stronger the light. But not always, I think. Not always, I feel. Not always. Yes, sometimes yes. Okay, and the next question, very important. I am thinking about someone like Adolf Hitler, whose shadow must have
being big and dark.
Do you know this person? You don't know. Adolf Hitler. Hitler. Ah, sorry, my pronunciation, sorry. Hitler, whose shadow must have been deep and dark. Where is the Dharma light there? Okay, this technique, right? What is Hitler? What is Hitler? What is Hitler? What is it? Who is it? Who is Adolf Hitler? Ourselves, and not only ourselves, everything, all the surroundings and every condition makes things like that. Even this, this cannot be exist as it is by itself. It cannot exist by this itself. In order to be this, also this should be here. In order to be this, in order to be this, this should be here. This should be here. Everything, all everything, every other thing, every other being makes this possible to be here. Like this. Hitler too. All everything embodied him, in fact. Embodied him. Hitler. So Hitler couldn't exist by himself alone. Everything embodies him as Hitler. Okay. This understanding we need also. This is the meaning of also Heart Sutra. The emptiness. Emptiness means every being is every other being. Okay. So, where is the Dharma light there? Here. Okay. For example, where is the Dharma light there? Even in the Auschwitz concentration camp, in the hell, in the deep, dark abyss, hell. There were some real Dharma light. Did you read the man's search for meaning? Oh, there is very special Dharma light in the darkness. Really. Like lightning in the darkness. Even the concentration camp, there were real examples of Dharma light. So even Viktor Frankl, he is one of the Dharma light, and his books, Man's Search for Meaning. That is also one of the Dharma light. In this book, there are some very incredible Dharma light, real examples in that book. Therefore, where there is shadow, there is also light. Therefore, other way around, often we can find this. Yes. The stronger the shadow, the stronger the light. Also, there are many examples we can pick up. We can. But I don't know. Always like this. Some rare case, oh, I don't know. Okay. So, I remember Genpo Roshi said, the dreams of an angel are that of a demon, and the demons and the dreams of a demon are that of an angel. My question. Angels' dreams and demons' dreams are same. It means or not? Yes. Ah, really? So demons and the angels, they have same dream. Not always. Yes. Opposite. Sorry, I couldn't maybe my understanding is too poor about this. But demons, what's here? Okay, let us keep this our own core. We put answer and clarify. Oh, okay, I fully understand. Not like this, not like this. We should keep. Oh, yes. It is not the matter of good or bad, you know? Yes, but this is not the matter of good or bad, but what we mean, what this really means, it is a matter of to see our reality. Light Trinity and Shadow Trinity, we both always have such a reality. So we need to clearly see. We have, for example, ego habit. Family, we have. Anyone of you don't have it? you don't have it. We all have unfathomable. We in fact black hole. No? We cannot know. Yeah, this is therefore we should be core and core. Simple answer. Oh, I understand. Okay. Finish. Not like this. Okay. Okay. Perhaps light and shadow are potentialities either, or both can. Both can actualize. I think the main point is like this. Did I understand it? Main point. Okay. This was the question. And now I would like to mention what I forgot last evening. I forgot it's very important. I was going to tell you, but completely I forgot. But I think this after Dogo's talk, I would like to mention about this. So, if Dogo can see.
So, I guess tonight I wanted to talk about, firstly about Hogensan. I've been with Hogensan for quite a long time, almost half my life, I guess. And one of the things about Hogensan, and I know everybody sees this with Hogensan, enjoys this, is his appreciation for life. Constantly fascinating. So knowing him for as long as I have, and some of you as well, his constant fascination and joy and appreciation. And for me, I feel that ignorance, and the Buddha talks about ignorance, basically the substance of that is a lack of appreciation for life, not seeing life as it is. Because when you see life as it is, it seems to you, you have this sense of appreciation, which brings a lot of joy, but not just joy, it brings a lot of depth, especially depth in our life. For me, my gauge for my Dharma practice and just my general relationship to the world and to people is whether I feel shallow or I have depth, I feel deep in an encounter. So I really hate feeling shallow. That's basically my teacher. If I feel shallow in the moment, if I meet someone, I talk and I act and I play, and I just don't feel like I've genuinely met with that person. Master Rinzai said, when you keep following others, when you keep listening to other people all the time, instead of yourself, you constantly feel rushed. And I like this, because it's that feeling sometimes when you're sort of you're not in your depth, you're feeling shallowness, and you talk to someone, and for some reason you're rushed. Why? There's no one's rushing you. There's just this sense of feeling rushed. And I guess that's something that I don't sense in holding time. It never seems rushed. So I hope that my notes may be useless, but I was going to talk about something tonight. Genjo's talk last night I found really amazing. So clear. So I'm going to plagiarize that for the next 50 years, I think. When you're not around. Okay. So, it's funny, Genjo and I we've known each other for quite a long time, but we've never really talked about the Dharma very much. Not really clear, not about Prajna and things like this. So, I'm going to be a little bit brave tonight and just try and talk about Genjo's talk and what it reminded me of, a period of my practice, my life practice with Holgan San, about the practice of Prajna Paramita. It's a strange thing when we read that, the practice, the take refuge in the practice of Prajna Paramita. What does that mean? We talk about Prajna being understanding, and we can, but essentially, Avalokiteshvara now flowing in the deep course of understanding. So it's this flowing prajna, flowing understanding. So to me, that also is tied up with appreciation of life. So let me unfold my useless notes. Don't worry, I've got big writing, not too much there. I guess Holgan San tonight was going to talk about Ryokan. You were going to mention about Ryokan, and we mentioned some things today about some Zen poets. And again, isn't the Zen poets, they don't muck around too much. They just give us this appreciation of life. Oh, ancient pond, a frog jumps in, splash, sound of water. So there's this immediate kind of appreciation of life. There's no intermediaries. So essentially that's what a Zen teacher does, what a master does. It helps us to take the backward step. Holgan San, everyone's talked about this week, taking that backward step, or Ekko Hensho in Japanese, taking that backward step. And that's into that appreciation, I guess. That backward step is the realm of appreciation. So a Zen master can help to push us back there sometimes, or maybe take us by the hand and walk us back, or mess with our reasoning sometimes and twist our mind around until we take that rapid step. Many different ways, each way new and fresh. But essentially to take that backward step. I always feel too that a Zen teacher helps a student clearly understand what matters in practice. What matters and what doesn't matter. So this really needs clarifying. What matters and what doesn't matter. A teacher can help with that, I think, very much. And Hogensan has helped me with that. Endlessly helps me with that still. Every day, in fact. Sometimes, mostly politely, but sometimes not so politely. So I guess, what I'm talking about with the Zen poets and things is noticing that the real happening really occurs. The real happening. Zendro talked about that last night, the real. So for me, that's what the word Zen means to me. When someone says, what does Zen mean? I don't really have a down pat answer. You think I would after all these years. But I guess what I really feel is Zen means the real. What is real? What is actually happening? Zen, the word samadhi translated into Japanese, translated into English, really means to receive the real correctly. Samadhi is sometimes translated as that. To receive the real as it is. To receive the truth. And all week we've been talking about, I did this thing, this direction. All week we've been talking about this direction, not this direction. And I'll talk about that in a moment. One of the things about the Soto way of meditation, Shikantaza, it has been called, back in ancient China, it was called silent illumination. Silent illumination. Now the silent part we kind of get, yeah? Maybe, at least on the outside. But the illumination, this is the really important part, if you like. The illumination. Well, another translation of that is shining silently. This is shining silently. So not only must we take that backward step, but we must wake up. Really, we must wake up. So this is, so we wake up when we stop dreaming, basically. So Gendro's talk for me last night was about that, about the precision needed, the thoroughness that we need to stop dreaming. We dream and dream and dream, image upon image upon image. We go from one image to another image. Hogensan used to say, from the cowshed to the stable, that's where we go. This image to that image. And, even when we breathe out, do we have an image of the breath coming out like this? We have a subtle image. We don't need those images. And in fact, to be really intimate with the real, and essentially that's what Zen is about. It is for me anyway. I'm a bit of a softy, I guess. Intimacy. Sometimes I see the Japanese word for satori translated as intimacy. So we feel that, don't we? Especially, maybe not when you're sitting on your cushion, but you walk outside, put on your shoes and see that peacock. There's this intimacy. Just, so beautiful. So how does this all happen? So this is a little story about stopping dreaming, I guess. It's just I mentioned this to Hogensan today, if he remembered this, and he said, no. So it wasn't a big deal for him, but it was a big deal for me, big deal. Once I was, this is about 5 years ago or so, I was complaining to Hogensan, which I do sometimes. You, blah, blah, you, you're not giving us enough time and things like this. And he looked at me. Normally he just ignores me. And he looked at me and said, what about you? You haven't been coming to me for Doksan. you haven't been really talking to me, you haven't really been engaging. And you know what he said? Genjo's been calling me, having Doksan all the time. look. So, you know, I knew Genjo, but not so well. Come on. So what do you think I did? I was determined, to say the least. So I drove home and got home, and I was shocked. I was kind of angry, you know, messy, just messy. But then I thought, no, I'm ashamed. I'm really ashamed of myself. I felt shallow, like I'd done this. I felt that shallowness. What an idiot I was. What an idiot. What a waste. What have I been doing? So, I guess for some time, because in my early practice with Hogensan, and even before I met Hogensan, things came easily for me. Prone to, you know, weird and wacky experiences and encounters with Zen. It sort of came. And you know, and another example of my real, absolute, I think I'd be in a madhouse or dead if it wasn't for Hogensan, how much he had grounded me. So an example of such a thing is when I was in Japan, I had one of these encounters. You know, and I was at the Izu Peninsula, which is an amazing place. You know, and I was in the States, you know, 100 feet tall, and just, and I caught the train home to Hogan's Temple. That's quite an experience, catching the train home in that sort of state. So I walked in, and Hogensan, I walked into the temple, it was night time, it was dark. Hogensan was having some noodles with his wife, Keiko. And I walked in, and he looked at me, eating his noodles, and he knew that, you know, I wanted to present this to him as Doksan. He looked at me and said, "You don't have to put it in the fridge." And so I okay, and I walked out, and we talked in the morning. So, but this complete, you know, just grounding, and for so many years, Hogensan telling me to, you know, really capture that ordinariness in life, ordinariness, down to earth, nothing special. So I guess why I'm telling you that is that this, you know, sort of was calming my early 20s and things. Then there was a period of stagnancy, you know. Sort of thought, experienced all that, know it quite well. I'd hear other people talking about it and think, it's not quite right, it's more like this, you know. So but there was this period of stagnancy. You know, it came and went, but the period I'm talking about, I was definitely very stagnant and quite arrogant. Definitely not helping other people very much at all. Being selective and stingy with the Dharma aspects, you know. I didn't care to help these people. I wanted to present, you know, this high teaching to select few, and will I ever meet someone I can present this to? This is absolutely not the Dharma. Not at all. So Hogensan scolded me on this, and it really affected me. So Rinzai says, you know, we go around begging for crumbs from our teachers. And that's what it was like. I just was hanging around the Zen Center kind of begging for crumbs. So I arrived home and I asked myself, okay, so what teaching that Hogensan has given me? What teaching am I absolutely certain in here? What have I got from him? Because I was thinking, is he going to tell me to go, or is that it? I was kind of scared. I thought, okay, so what do I have? Yeah? What teaching am I absolutely certain? And I had to really admit to myself, nothing, absolutely nothing I had absolutely nothing in that present moment. And we, right now, none of us have absolutely anything that we have from this teaching. Nothing. We don't have it. So there I was, the real sense of aloneness, really deeply alone. And I'm not talking about a sort of mystical aloneness, I'm just a very ordinary, kind of a little bit frightened, as I said, this aloneness. So I didn't know anything for certain. And another thing that I've always kind of asked myself, and still do, much more regularly now, is, you know, on my deathbed, if this was my last few breaths, would I be unashamed of myself? What would I know? What would I carry with me? Would I think, ah, yes, okay, the Buddha said this, Hogan-san said this. I wouldn't. I absolutely wouldn't. You know, when I first say this to you, you think, oh, well, no, I think there'd be this, would be certain. So I'm talking about a real bone shaking certainty. Really, really honest with ourselves. You know, so for me that's a good reflection. There was a few breaths left. What would I grasp at? Or would I grasp at all? And the other thing was, you know, I thought, what if Hogan-san died? You know, what would I have? All of these questions were just coming through me very quickly. So I guess there was that aloneness just with this here, just this sensation of being in the present moment. That's what I'm sure of. But even that's not precise enough. And this is, you know, what we get from Genzo's talk. That's not precise enough. Everything we really say, we can go further with our precision. Yeah? And just from these Zen practice. Going further with our precision. All the little extra bits we put on. And we just go, ah, no, that's extra. So on the very first night, Hogan-san said, after our first tiny period of Zazen, has your breath already become an object? So we so quickly make this object. Right? So I guess back then, you know, the word awareness had become a little stale for me. And I wasn't, I guess, 100% sure what that was. I was a bit confused, awareness, mindfulness, a little bit too, everything was a bit mixed up. So if I was really honest and just for the first time asked myself, what's this here? What was present was just this unknowing. Nothing to do with knowledge, but unknowing. So right now, there's a knowing turned on. This was all I could be really certain of. That there was this knowing occurring. This is what I said to myself at that time. There was a knowing occurring. Awareness. I mean, this awareness occurring. Even to say, is it inside or outside, even that, I mean, right now, this knowing is occurring, the feeling is known, is it inside or outside? I can't decide on that one. So we say no inside, no outside in emptiness. Maybe that's what this means. Yeah? No inside, no outside in this sort of honesty, this sort of letting go, this sort of sensitivity. A re-evaluation of this. Endlessly re-evaluating this. What is this? So I certainly couldn't trust my own stories about who I was and what I'd experienced. But where were these experiences now? Absolutely, totally abandoned, useless, totally. So I guess Hogan-san now uses this word background awareness, and this is fabulous, fabulous work, because it definitely, I mean, we all get that sense of what it feels like, is background awareness, foreground consciousness. So that's what I'm talking about when I say this knowing. So it's open, empty and non-locatable. It was open, so the open way. And sometimes the word shunyata, always translated as emptiness, sometimes you see it's translated as openness. Really floats my boat. Openness. Yeah. I like that. So this awareness is open. So I guess in Zen practice what we need is to be real Zen practice. And remember the sort of state I was in, like, okay, my head was aflame. I'm not going to muck about here. This is serious, absolutely serious. No assumptions. No assumptions. Kenjo said this last night. You know, we assume that when we die, do we assume the universe dies with us, you know? Or do we assume the universe hangs around? So I kind of at that stage assumed that life is like a stage and we enter it when we are born and leave it when we are, you know, another assumption. Another assumption. The other real problem I find is our generalizations. We generalize. And this is the biggest problem for many of us practitioners. Constantly generalize. I did a public talk not so long ago, Jocelyn Rada was there, and I mentioned generalizing there. And there was a woman who came up to me afterwards, an Aboriginal lady, Australian Aboriginal lady. And she'd been at a conference in America with Indigenous writers. And she'd met this Navajo man who'd been on a very long retreat with a shaman, an Eskimo shaman. I don't know whether that's a PC word anymore. But you know, I just got that image how far away this Eskimo shaman lives and practices. And he's teaching, don't generalize. This is his teaching, don't generalize. So we're always wanting to make our mark on something. What? I mean, we kind of know why, don't we? To be really honest. We want to express ourselves. Don't express ourselves, express ourselves. Put it out there, put the stamp. I call this the way, like a dog pees on a pole. Yeah? The way a dog urinates, pees on a pole. Sees the pole, so we hear a teaching. Yeah? See that pole, dog walks up. Now that pole's mine. Yeah? Now that pole's mine. So after how many Dharma talks we've sat with Hogenthal, such a common occurrence, not so much lately, but back in the old days when there was lots of questions and answers and much more free talking, Hogenthal would say something, and then there was, so that's like this. Just always dumbfounded, like, what's the use of saying that? Most of the time. Sometimes it's very, very helpful, and don't get me wrong. But mostly it's just useless. So that's like when Christ said this. That may be true. Well, that's like the way the Sufis do this. Yeah? But that's on a general sense. But in a more subtle sense, we do this constantly. Yeah? So with our Zazen, you know, Zazen's like a trinity. It's a triangle. It's round. It's square. You know, we're always, no, it's not like anything. This isn't like anything else. It's not like anything else. And you're not like anything. You know? Absolutely. Completely. So what I'm saying is, we know this, but utterly we must know this. This is Zen practice. So even, you know, even again, the tendency there is to say, this knowing that is present, always, this is it. Even that, at the time I wasn't even saying that. But that's all I knew, that's all I could genuinely encounter, was this knowing. Nothing. I knew nothing about it. So this was a very, very strong experience for me. Fired on by Golden Boy over here. So really, this was a very deep encounter. It stuck. It was always fresh, but essentially there was this knowing presence, and that's all I knew, that's all I was confident with, you know? So I confirmed that even this knowing, even when we sleep, this knowing is still occurring. Very, very subtle. So, yes, to confess, I really didn't sleep for 2 weeks. I missed the crazy for 2 weeks. I would lie there beside my wife and she would be sleeping. And there was a sort of a very subtle sense of sleep, but very much this brightness was on. It was quite astounding, you know, really quite astounding. I'm not tired at all, nothing. Just this, Daniel used the word the other day, reacquaint. It felt like a reacquainting with something that was always there anyway. But a reacquainting, becoming more intimate with what is here, what is here now. So, I guess, yeah, it's just this constant searching. So even now when we practice, even now when I sit down to every Zazen, I've got this scan for object making. We make objects. The way I express it, and I'm not being really careful with my words here, but just to give you the raw material of how I feel, is that objects don't really exist. We make them. You know. So the Buddha was always, you know, not existing or not non-existing. And I guess this experience of this knowingness, when you're really in the depth of that, that's really awakened, that's shining silently is on. For me, those 2 weeks were like, I wrote a poem at the time, long poem, so I can't remember it. But I remember writing at the time that objects appeared as they do at dusk or at dawn. You know? There's this little bit of a kind of a softness. So that's all I can say about that. It's about objects in that sense, about my experience of seeing and hearing. Everything is a little bit more subtle, but just because that light had been really turned on and around. So I was noticing this. But, you know, in this we must be careful fundamentally not to, Hogan-san always talks about not to focus. This is true. So I think many of us make a mistake in meditation when we notice background awareness, we fall back in, and we have a bit too of a tight inside kind of focus. Again, we're assuming it's kind of inside. We're kind of holding it. So getting the right balance in Dharma practice is absolutely everything. That's Dharma practice, the way we practice together. Finding the right, not too tight, not too loose. No teacher can tell you that. You have to find this not too tight, not too loose. We need a precision and a certain amount of focus, but not too much. Openness. So recognizing that knowing not inside or outside, I think is a very good start to really being honest with ourselves. So this essentially is what the Buddha really meant by vipassana, seeing things as they are. This is vipassana practice. Real vipassana practice, without breaking it up into its stages and things like that, real and genuine vipassana practice, is Zazen, the Zen practice, all of Buddhism, one. And it's the thoroughness of meeting with the real. The Buddha said, things are not what they seem, nor are they any different. Things are not what they seem, nor are they any different. Nor are they any different. Oh, even me, I... Yeah, that's a cracker, isn't it? Things are not what they seem, nor are they any different. And they're not different. Oh, come on, you're going to get me confused. Stop. So let me continue. This is my explainer. So what I see by that is, so things are not what they seem. Maybe I've started down a road here I can't finish, by the way. Try. Okay. So let's do it together. So things are not what they seem. But for me at the moment what this means is don't go looking for anything different. It is what it is. It's not what it seems because you have all these assumptions and ideas about it. But don't think that there's something hidden. And really this is a Zen teaching. And you talk about the Prajnaparamita Sutra, a bit tough. Nothing is hidden. Nothing is hidden in this encounter right now. Nothing is hidden. This is a beautiful experience. The answer. Just the answer. No one's hiding anything from you. Yeah? So there's nothing hidden here. Nothing at all. But things are not what they seem. So, something with that nothing hidden, it's like when I met Hogenson, when I first met Hogenson, and I saw his joy and appreciation as I do all the time, as we do all the time. So initially I thought, he knows something. Yeah, he knows something, or he's encountering some sort of kundalini experience, or all of it. But no, he was happy because he appreciates life. That's it. That's what I know now. That's why Hogenson's so happy. He appreciates life. He thoroughly appreciates his rice milk every single day. You know? His thoroughness. Again, thoroughness. So, life without images. Who's left? What's left? The Zen masters are always saying this. Who? What? When? They're throwing this back onto us. So for me, I was always asking myself, what is this? And then with this sort of new level of intimacy that was awakening here, I turned it around, who? Who is this? Come on, stop thinking about what is this? Who is this? Intimacy. You know? So I brought a few quotes, and these are my favourite quotes, I think. You know, this, again, I mentioned this already tonight, but we've been talking about this direction coming, not going out to objects. And then really in a moment of real genuine awakening, which we all have a sense of every now and then, there's this direction. And I remember in Japan madly drawing a little diagram with an eye and arrows coming this way. You know, my eye and arrows coming this way. And when I got back to Australia, I looked at this, thought, I knew what that meant. You know, it was this encounter. And as Hogenson said the other night when he was watching the ant, it disappeared and there was this whole universe entered. But he honestly has this feeling, doesn't it? This direction. So, Dongshan, Pongshan, pretty much the founder of our way, silent illumination. He said, just avoid seeking from others. And in that sense, also we can use the word object. So avoid seeking from objects. Avoid seeking from others, or you will be distant from yourself. it is not, I am not it, it is I. You must understand in this way in order to merge thusness in the Tathagata. It is, I am not it, it is I. When I first read this, no idea. No idea what that means. In particular, Tongshan said again in those Hokkyo Zanmai, you are not it, it is you. He repeated this different times. And really, it was the first time I read Dogen when he said, to see yourself as others is delusion. To see others as yourself is enlightenment. And I genuinely have no idea what that meant. But now it's as obvious can be. And maybe for us all, that's obvious. Just to say, ah, I am you. This is rubbish. Yeah? It's not. You are the experience of you being me. That's genuine realization. A big difference. You are not it. It is you. Intimacy, intimacy, intimacy. Utter, utter, utter. So the Buddha said it first. I alone and the world honored one. I alone and the world honored one. This is his moment of enlightenment. This is what he said. I alone. So again, he wasn't talking about something out there. I alone. And when Tongshan said that, that was his enlightenment poem too. I am not it, it is I. This is his enlightenment poem. So what's the point of this? I guess I'm getting back to the joy of Hogensan and his appreciation for life. And on the very first retreat with Hogensan, I just watched him watching insects and ants, and it was just such a wake-up. You know, such a wake-up. Again, a reminder of my shallowness. I was only 22, and already I was shallow. But, you know, watching this, there was no shallowness about Hogensan doing this. So, and then in almost the first teaching session, you introduced Ryokan. You said, the butterfly opens, the flower comes. Other way around? Doesn't matter. Ah, what did I say? Things are not what they seem. So is it... Yeah? What? Yeah. The butterfly comes. The flower opens. The flower opens, the butterfly comes. Boy, oh boy, that changed my life. I was hooked. The butterfly comes, the flower opens. The flower opens, the butterfly comes. That's it. Real. Meeting the real. So Ryokan appreciated life. And so he could see life. And Hogensan appreciated life. So are we appreciating life? Pardon? Jasmine Lutheran.
Yes. Oh, therefore. Oh, I feel all of you. So, I feel very unique universe. Each one you and your attribute, your form. I feel very unique. Very unique universe. So, no room for me to be here anymore. So, fortunately, very fortunately, I don't need to be here to Tata and to show my meaning place. Oh, this is wonderful. Yeah, this is how I see it, this view. This is what I wanted to clarify. That is what I forgot. But this is the beginning. This is the beginning point. Each one of us, each one of us. You are your own universe. Inevitably, naturally, each one of you are your own universe. Very unique. Very unique, incomparable universe. Each one of us, each one of us. This universe. Very unique universe. Did you know? Did you know this yourself? You are very unique, your own universe. This is what I wanted to do. So-called universe. Oh. I really feel so-called universe. All universe. Including myself in your universe. You are, when you so actively, so flowering, I was included in your universe. Oh, naturally. And Takuji also, I was included in your universe. Then you are too. And this, you know. So, but not only all of you, each one of you. This universe, I am included in this universe. Mutually inclusive. Really. But here, most basic. Basic thing. And this, we are empty. Even though for whatever. And this, we really No. Just calm, calming carry. Being the carry is only calm, of course. Sunyata Samadhi. This base. Unless we we are not unique. We are not unique. Just carrying the same common habit. Whatever we all successfully can clarify anything on the embodied, that is karmic embodied. Okay. For example, real example, I would like to show. During Second World War, there is a very famous special general who practiced Zazen. Once I mentioned, General Ishii, who was had long time Zen practitioner. He had a concentration camp in Manchuria and many prisoners because he did even vivisection at the living prison they are material for experience for him. In his group, research center for inventing some biochemical weapon. But he practiced that. And his prisoners were four. Malta. Malta means love. No, three plants. And they so all the names and personalities, just numbers, Marco. Many of them were killed by infections and experiments. He had such a fixed way of practice. Only for Japan. Only for Japanese victory. His purpose, whatever he practiced, Zazen, even Zazen, is only for this sixth purpose. This is not written in the Zazen, no, of course not. So, in such a case, can you call very unique? Is the universe so unique? Unique and creative? No. That's hard. It's your ego habit. We cannot call him, we cannot see the universe. Our unique universe. Can you? That's a typical example. No. We cannot be creative and unique. And as long as we carry the same karmic habit, you understand? If we lack this vital line, we are not unique, creative. Just we are carrying the same habit. Therefore, not unique, not creative. in what I wanted to say. It's too serious. therefore, that's how we think of humor. But you have. Too serious. I'm very sorry. Therefore, I feel the desire, I think. I don't think I am. You need. I don't think you need. No. There is a fixed idea. There is a fixed. Only he was brainwashed since he was young. Very brainwashed and conditioned. Very conditioned. Everybody in that generation, when I was very young, everybody had a very fixed idea to get the victory for Japan. Japan is a like a divine, only one divine country in the world. So we are brainwashed very deeply in brain. In his case, he is not unique at all. He was only brainwashed and conditioned. Is it unique? Real uniqueness is when he from the bottom selfless. When we are really selfless, then inevitably our uniqueness is already there. Otherwise, even if we get any knowledge and skills, we learn the technique, that is not really unique, but something. We are so well educated. But we have many skills, many techniques to persuade audiences. Many skills we have. We are very clever. Very clever we are. But unless we are really helpful, we are still half conditioned handicap nearly. Because no real creativity. This is not true. To be really unique and creative, I don't think we need a special technique. Just our, when we are really creative, even one moment, in fact, and our original uniqueness in all the things. It's natural. Very attentive to your person. So we have all elements. Sometimes hungry ghost in the all potentiality, all possibility. Yes. Also, I asked to my master's master. Where are you in this charge of ten of Harding Vicar? Where are you? I now directly to my master's master. And he said, no, where? He said, immediately, no, where? Nowhere. He said, nowhere. Nowhere means, yes. Nowhere else. Very embodied there. Okay. Oh, thank you very much. One thing. Someone gave me a short note. Actually. Okay. So, only a few of you can come to the table. Okay. Okay, this evening. Go for your town also, and also two of us receive the town. Therefore, please, you are free to. Please come to Doko or to me. How do you like? Okay. Don't expect. Okay, so we come to Doko. Otherwise, he is dead.
We'll start from the Malta and the Garden of Doko.
From 9 o'clock? From 9 to 10. Okay.